Home for all too short a spell, soon Ian was travelling again, this time to Shangri-La, or close to it. He spent a week's holiday in western China prior to a conference in Vietnam. Arriving at Kunming, city of a perpetual spring, in the province of Yunnan, he was met by Xiao Chun, his Waikato PhD student, and her husband Xiao Feng, his Waikato research assistant, who had been visiting their hometown. And a memorable adventure began. A week's full-on Oriental experience where other Westerners were rarely seen and knives and forks might never have been invented. Early the next morning, they took off for Lijiang, a short distance but a whole new culture. China has about 50 minority groups, almost all in the western part, and Lijiang is the centre of the Naxi people and home to several other minorities too. These people have one of the world's few living pictographic languages. They're extraordinarily open and pleasant. Lijiang is said to have inspired the fictional Shangri-La, though it is very different topographically. And the Naxi are clean. The streets are spotless. Water from the Himalayas rushes through wide, deep trenches that serve as gutters. Water that is sparkling and drinkable. Toilets, though Eastern style, are clean too. The Yangtze River, here called the Jinsha River, or Jinsha Jiang, flows from the Himalayas and travels southward, parallel with and adjacent to the Mekong, and a third river called the Salween. The three run parallel near a place in Yunnan that is called Shangri-La. Salween, the westernmost, meanders through Myanmar and eventually finds its way into the Andaman Sea. Mekong, in the middle, enters the South China Sea at its delta in Vietnam. But the Yangtze, in contrast, does a complete about turn at a place called Shigu, Stone Drum, then heads east, and after many adventures reaches the sea at Shanghai, creating along the way the country that we know as China today. We took a car from Lijiang to overlook the great first bend of the Yangtze at Shigu, a notable point of singularity on the Earth's surface, and then began a 2.5-day trek along Tiger Leaping Gorge, a fearsome gorge where the Yangtze shows off its awesome power. They hiked up to 3,000 meters elevation for a day, all the while gazing across at the beautiful, mystical, snow-capped peaks of Jade Dragon Snow Mountain. A family of wild pandas was spotted here not many years ago. Then, down low, beside the raging torrent, along hazardous trails cut through the solid rock of the riverside cliffs, we stayed in Naxi guest houses, clean, hospitable, and very oriental. No English spoken here. Although midwinter, there was no heating. People whiled away the dark hours, frozen in bed. We ate outside in courtyards, Chinese style, clutching our bowls of soup and shivering as the frigid chill of night descended each evening. On rising in the pitch black early morning, wearing everything we had, we breakfasted outside, clutching our steamed buns and bowls of congee, thin rice porridge, and once Tibetan sesame and yak butter tea. The days were gorgeous, sunny, warm, brisk, what our family calls Calgary weather. We took a lonely ferry across the Yangtze, spent a night in another village, and bussed back to Lijiang. This country is riven by mountain ranges and rivers into little villages, sunk in pastoral valleys with plentiful irrigation water and terraced agriculture, vegetable gardens with tobacco and coffee as cash crops. The isolation is tremendous. Our bus took several hours to ascend laboriously out of the village to a mountain ridge high above. The day before, we'd been travelling by taxi along a hairy road when behind us a cloud of dust signalled a rockfall that we had only just escaped. 100 rockfalls close to the road through this Yangtze Gorge each year, incurring several ghastly deaths. Tourist buses are prohibited, and insurance companies refuse to sell vehicle insurance. Western China is remote and exciting. Back in Lijiang, we spent a day in another unbelievably picturesque village nearby, again with clear water rushing beside every street, occasionally used for power water wheels, cooking, washing vegetables, and laundry. Yes, apparently toddlers do fall in occasionally, which must be hazardous given the water depth and speed of flow. Local people wear all kinds of colourful ethnic costumes. As well as Nashi, there were Tibetans and folk from several other minority groups. Although many tourists strolled around, they were all Chinese. There was literally not a Westerner to be seen, except in the mirror. Once, sitting inside in a courtyard for lunch, we heard very loud firecrackers in the street and rushed out to find that they had signalled the death of the old man next door. Ian could go on and on until he runs out of paper or file space on his laptop. The food was fabulous. There was little discernible difference between a home and a restaurant. Usually there was no menu. Xiaocheng would head into the kitchen for a hygiene check. They always passed the test, where vegetables and pieces of meat were laid out on a large table. In a long conversation, she would discuss with the woman what dishes we wanted and how they would cook them. Pretty well everything was wok-fried, even, apparently, yummy green vegetable dishes that seemed instead to be lightly steamed. And in just a few minutes, steaming food would be served to our table, dish after dish. Typically, we had four dishes, plus rice and soup, between the three of us. Some were highly spiced, and it was all delicious. All good things come to an end, and after a day or two back in Kunming, where Ian met Xiaocheng and Xiaofeng's four parents, it was on to Hanoi for the conference. Hanoi was great, especially the famous water puppets. But being a busy, noisy, bustling city, though we were staying at a cheap guest house in the old quarter, which was interesting, it paled in comparison with our recent experiences of Yunnan villages. The inhabitants, however, were extremely friendly, welcoming people.